From the best-selling Heroes of History series, Emerald Books presents Elizabeth Fry, Angel of Newgate, by Janet and Jeff Benge, read for you by Rebecca Gallagher. For information about other titles from this outstanding series that brings history to life, please visit emeraldbooks.com or call 800-922-2143. Chapter 1. Earlham Hall. 6-year-old Elizabeth Gurney, or Betsy, as everyone called her, ran from room to room. She wanted to catch one last glimpse of her old home before the coach came to take her away. She bumped into her grandmother in the hallway. "Slow down, child. You'll fall and hurt yourself." Betsy smiled. Her grandmother, whom she was named after, was a stout old woman dressed in a plain gray dress and starched white bonnet. Betsy knew she would miss her a lot. Indeed, she would miss many things about living at Gurney Court on Magdalen Street in Norwich. Betsy had always shared an upstairs bedroom with her two older sisters, Catherine, or Kitty as she was known, and Rachel. The bedroom window commanded a wonderful view of the narrow cobbled street below. Now, as she peeked through the curtains one last time, Betsy watched as a horse and cart plodded past. The cart was loaded with sacks of coal. Since it was Tuesday, Betsy knew that the coal was being delivered to the large haberdashery on the corner. A dog darted between the buggy traffic on the street, and an old woman with a walking stick hobbled toward the house. One-armed Betty, everyone called her. She often stopped outside the Gurney home, where Betsy's mother, Catherine Gurney, would give her food wrapped in a kerchief. Betsy suspected there was often a penny tied in the corner of the kerchief as well. Her mother was like that, always making sure the poor people in town had enough to eat. "'Tis thy duty to help the poor. We cannot help the whole of England, but we can help our neighbors," she would say to Betsy as she made up a basket of food for some needy family. Sometimes Betsy would accompany her mother on short walks along Norwich's busy streets to deliver food, something she loved to do. But now it was all over. Betsy's entire life was about to change as she, along with her two big sisters, her younger brother John, her four little sisters, Reshenda, Hannah, Louisa, and Priscilla, and their parents, was moving out to a large country estate called Earlham, located on the west side of town. Betsy tried to understand why they had to move. She gathered it had something to do with the ever-growing size of the Gurney family. In fact, she had seen her mother mending the skirting around the cradle just last week, and her mother confided to her that another baby was on the way. Betsy wondered whether it would be a boy or a girl. The only brother she had was John, who was a year younger than she. An earlier son, who was also named John, had died before Betsy was born. All she knew of him was his tiny grave at the Quaker burial ground on Chather Street.
7 little girls!" Betsy often heard people exclaim, especially at the Quaker meeting house they attended. "And all with red or golden hair! Who ever heard of such a thing?"
Betsy's mother would laugh at such comments and respond, "They are a handful to keep clothed and neat, but I wouldn't be without one of them." Betsy knew that her mother was telling the truth. Their home was a happy one. Betsy's father, John Gurney, belonged to a wealthy family who owned woolen mills in the area. He came from a long line of Quakers, as did Betsy's mother. Catherine Gurney's family had been prominent Quakers, and Catherine could trace her family line back to her great-grandfather, Robert Barclay, a famous and heroic early Quaker. Barclay had traveled with William Penn, who had gone on to found the colony of Pennsylvania in North America.
Now, in 1786, Betsy's parents insisted that all the children accompany them every Sunday morning to the meeting in the Quaker meeting house at Goat Lane. And Catherine Gurney read a passage from the Bible to the children each morning after breakfast. Although the Gurneys practiced a more modern form of Quakerism and did not keep many of the rules of the Plain Quakers, Betsy knew all about the older Plain Quaker ways. Plain Quakers were people such as her grandmother and her Uncle Joseph, her father's brother. Uncle Joseph, who lived with them in the house at Norwich, wore a plain black vest and top coat over a collarless white shirt and a black, wide-brimmed hat. He wouldn't remove his hat even when he was indoors, and he refused to take off his hat when he met someone who was more important than he was. He spoke using these and thous because these forms were once the way English speakers addressed an equal, while addressing an individual as you signaled a respect plain Quakers thought was improper. Everyone, including Betsy's father, thought all this to be bad manners. Uncle Joseph and the Plain Quakers disagreed. For generations, Quakers had refused to practice hat honor or use special polite speech for people of higher social rank as a protest against the idea that some people are superior. They believed all people carried the inward light of Jesus Christ, and no one should respect a person or class of people over another. All people should be addressed and treated in the same manner.
"Betsy, come downstairs. It's time to go,"
Betsy heard her mother call. Soon the entire family was seated in the coach, being pulled to their new home by 6 handsome black horses. Betsy tried not to think about the previous time she had attempted to get into the coach. She was not proud of her behavior then, and it was hard for her to explain the fear that had washed over her that day. The Gurney family had been preparing for an outing to visit distant relatives in the country, and Betsy was the last to get into the coach. As she climbed into the carriage, she was overcome with fear. She ran back inside the house and sat weeping in the corner of the kitchen. Every time her mother or father approached, she shrieked with fear. Eventually, the whole outing was called off, and it took Betsy many hours to feel calm again. Betsy had heard Kitty ask their mother what was wrong with Betsy.
"It's just her affliction," her mother replied. "She's afraid of so many things."
Betsy felt ashamed at the response, but she knew her mother was right. The long drapes in her room at night turned into tall soldiers with swords. The twisting hallways in the house echoed with the footsteps of ghosts. And every time she heard a dog howl in the night, she wondered if the door had been properly barred. She was quite sure her sisters and brother didn't worry about these things as she did. Fear and worry were her affliction, something she found ways to deal with most of the time, like today as the family rode along toward their new home.
"Look, I can see it," Hannah said, tugging at Betsy's sleeve. "Our new house. It's so big. It has 4 sets of chimneys."
Betsy smiled. Hannah was right. The coach rolled down a driveway lined with elm trees, winding through beautiful parkland and coming to a stop in front of an enormous red brick building that dated back 200 years, Earlham Hall. Betsy's mother and Hannah Judd, their faithful housekeeper, took several days to transfer all of the Gurney family's furniture and other belongings into the new home. During this time, Betsy's mother allowed the children to explore their new surroundings. The house itself was big and sprawling, with attics, winding passageways, staircases, and large cupboards and closets. Outside, it was surrounded by gardens and green lawns fringed by trees. Beyond the trees was open pasture speckled with colorful wildflowers.
Stables and a coach house, along with a workshop and the laundry, stood nearby. A short distance from Earlham Hall was the Yare River, where the children could play and sail boats. And while she hadn't been eager to leave her grandmother's house in Norwich, Betsy had to admit that the surroundings of their new house were wonderful. Once the house was put in order, it was time for school. When they lived at Gurney Court, Catherine Gurney had taught her two oldest daughters Latin, French, English, history, geography, and mathematics. Now it was time for Betsy to take her place at the study table. While Betsy had looked forward to this, her dreams of being a good student were soon dashed. Unlike Kitty and Rachel, she was not, as her mother put it, a natural learner. Learning to read took a long time, and Betsy gave up on the idea of ever being a good speller. Languages were almost impossible to remember, and her brain often confused the order of numbers in mathematics, making her feel foolish. The only subject Betsy enjoyed was history. This was partly because of the exciting times in which she lived. Her mother wrote down the word revolution. "That," she said, "means turning something upside down, that something has been the same way for a very long time, and then all of a sudden everything is on its head and quite different." Betsy thought this definition through. Her mother had read her stories about the American Revolution and how the colonists in North America had risen up and fought and defeated the British military forces 5 years earlier, winning their independence from Great Britain. Revolution, indeed. Betsy was grateful that Catherine Gurney did not make her children study for too long each day, leaving them plenty of time to play. Earlham Hall offered endless opportunities for games, such as hide-and-seek. Betsy and her sisters once decided to count every cupboard in the house, but they gave up after 80. The house had been added onto and altered so many times that there were nooks and crannies everywhere. Betsy liked to join in the games, but sometimes she became scared when she was not found for a long time. Often at night, she imagined people staring in the windows at her, or ghosts in the corner of the living room, lurking in the shadows beyond the light of the candles. Betsy was always embarrassed that none of her family members, not even the youngest children, were concerned about such things. In the fall, Betsy's mother gave birth to another child, a boy named Samuel. 2 years later, when Betsy was 8 years old, another son, Joseph John, was born. By the time little Joseph arrived, Betsy was doing better with her reading and writing, and she was able to start keeping a diary every day, like her older sisters did. Her diary entries contain lots of spelling errors, but most of the time, Betsy could work out what she wanted to say. She wrote about riding the pet ponies her father had bought for the children to ride in the meadow, collecting bluebells and daffodils, and roasting potatoes in the glowing embers of fires at the end of the garden. She also wrote about the interesting stream of visitors who came to Earlham Hall for an afternoon or a week. Many were Quakers her parents were expected to show hospitality to. But others were from different walks of life, Catholics and Protestants, whose company her parents enjoyed. Betsy also wrote about the endless hours she and her 9 siblings spent at the Quaker Meeting House on Goat Lane in Norwich. Once or twice a week, the family rode into Norwich to take their seats at the meeting, men on the left, women on the right. As much as Betsy wanted to please her mother, she found sitting still for long periods of time next to impossible. Since the Quakers had no paid clergy, anyone was free to stand and speak during a service, if the spirit moved them. As far as Betsy could see, this meant long silences when everyone was supposed to be praying. Sometimes an hour would pass before anyone spoke, while other times no one said a word and the meeting was dismissed. During the meetings, Betsy perfected the art of praying with her eyes slightly open so she could look around and see what everyone else was doing. Her mother always looked serene. Her father, on the other hand, often opened his eyes and looked bored, but not as bored as the Gurney children. It was hard not to giggle and pinch each other once in a while. The children developed code words to use in their diaries to describe their days. Betsy often wrote, "Goats was dis," which meant that a Quaker meeting was particularly unpleasant. In May 1791, when Betsy was nearly 11 years old, her mother again gave birth to a baby boy who was named Daniel. Betsy had spent much of the time during her mother's pregnancy fretting that something would happen to her mother or the unborn baby. She sometimes tiptoed into the bedroom to see whether her mother was still breathing, and she prayed that her mother would not trip when she walked up or down the stairs. Although Daniel was born without incident, Betsy still could not shake the feeling that something terrible was about to happen.